The letters R, P and C appear on screen. Under the relevant letter, the words Recorded Picture Company. The letters and words revolve and disappear, to be replaced by Wei and Han. The two cross each other and join to become the name Han Wei in dark letters with a white outline. The screen fades to black. Recorded Picture Company, Han Wei, Film Council, Scottish Screen and Svenomedia present a Jeremy Thomas production, a film by David Mackenzie. A grim 1950s morning, a swan swims on the River Clyde. Beneath the murky waters, its webbed feet and round breast. In white letters, Ewan McGregor, Tilda Swinton, Peter Mullen, Emily Mortimer. Young Adam. The swan, so graceful above the water, swims past a barge. Under the surface, its feet paddle slowly in an awkward fashion, then speed up. The riverbed is a grey-green and littered with an old rope, with rusting metal and bits of rubbish. Casting by Des Hamilton. Costume designer Jacqueline Duran. Production designer Lawrence Dorman. Film editor Colin Money. Director of photography Giles Nutjens. Music by David Byrne. Floating on the surface is the body of a woman with long hair. Her arms are stretched out above her head, and the lower half of her torso and legs are submerged. Associate producers Peter Watson, Stephen Molman, Gillian Berry. Based on the novel by Alexander Trocky. Joe, a handsome young man with light brown hair being ruffled by a breeze, stands on a barge looking out over the water, a cigarette in his hand. He sees the body and picks up a boat hook. He reaches out and tries to hook the woman's arm, but fails. Co-producers Alexandra Stone, Nick O'Hagan, Jim Reeve. Produced by Jeremy Thomas. Written and directed by David Mackenzie. The woman in the water is wearing a nylon slip with a patterned hem. As Joe tries to get a hold of her, a man with a cap comes up behind him.
Oh, you're bloody useless. Give me that.
Joe hands over the boat hook to the grey-bearded Les, who proceeds to hook the woman's petticoat and tug her towards the barge. When she's close enough, both men reach down and grab a hand, lifting the body out of the water. They struggle to haul her on board. The two men lay her face down on the wooden deck. Her arms are outstretched and her legs splayed. The petticoat is raised slightly, revealing the lower half of her naked buttocks. Joe studies her, then turns to Les.
I suppose we should cover her.
The older man looks up, thinks, then nods. Les's eyes linger for a moment on the slender figure lying on the deck. Then he about turns and walks away. Joe kneels down by the body and awkwardly tugs the petticoat down so it covers the woman's backside. He places his hand on her back on the bare flesh above the petticoat. Les walks back along the barge, clutching a sack. Joe, still down on one knee, takes it from him and gently places it over her head and torso. He runs his hand over the sack, then rises to his feet. Both men stand looking down at the body.
Better call an ambulance.
Right.
Joe nods his head, sticks his hands in the pockets of the black donkey jacket he's wearing, steps down off the barge, and walks through the coal depot where they're moored. He scrunches over the coal and through small puddles towards the entrance. He looks back as Les makes his way into the hold of the barge. The body lies prostrate, only the legs and arms protruding from under the sack. Later, Joe appears at the hatchway of the barge. He climbs downstairs where Les, his wife Ella, and small son are at the table.
So? I don't suppose they'll be in a hurry. I told them she was dead.
Joe walks behind Ella, and as she rises from the table, he sits down next to the dark-haired boy, Jim. Ella goes to a stove and lifts a slice of fried bread and some bacon from a frying pan and plates it. She places this in front of Joe.
No egg this morning.
I forgot to buy eggs.
Joe looks across at the scraps left on Les's plate. There's dried egg yolk clinging to his fork. Les sips from a mug of tea and ignores Joe, who scowls at Ella. Two ambulance men carry the body away on a stretcher. They lay it down beside two policemen. One of the policemen chases some kids away as his sergeant lifts the blanket covering the body. Joe, sitting on the deck of the barge, smoking, watches. He turns to gaze at Ella as she hangs out some washing, then back to see Les talking to the sergeant. Joe turns his attention back to Ella as she continues to hang out the washing. Ella, a dowdy woman in her 30s and wearing a heavy but torn long cardigan, sees him watching her. He looks away. He sits up when he sees the right leg of the woman on the stretcher slip out from under the blanket. The ambulance men lay the stretcher down and push the leg back onto it. Joe and Ella exchange a long look. Her lank, greasy hair flops over her face. She seems tense. Joe half smiles at her. Ella turns hurriedly away and goes down to the hold. Joe puffs on a cigarette as the ambulance doors are shut. Les saunters back across to the barge as Ella re-emerges, a rug over an arm. Joe gets to his feet.
What do the police think?
Thousand doesn't know. It's probably not murder. There wasn't a mark on the body.
You had a good look then. Kind of keep your eyes off a woman, even if she's dead.
She spins away. There's an admiring smile on Joe's face. Ella lays the rug over the barge's rail and starts beating it. Later, inside...
I reckon she must have just fallen in.
So how do you explain why she was only wearing a petticoat?
Joe lights a cigarette.
Maybe she was drunk. Maybe she was a tart, wandered aboard a ship or something.
Maybe she was pregnant.
Les looks up at his younger colleague.
Right.
Joe takes a long drag on a cigarette. Ella is peeling a potato over an enamel bowl. Joe sits staring into space and recalls watching Ella and Les in bed. He remembers sitting up on his own bed and watching the couple through a partition. Les on top of Ella swings off her.
Doesn't he matter, Les? It's just the drink.
Les, his back tattooed, sits on a chair subdued. Joe, bare-chested, puts his arm behind his head and lays back on his bed. In the present...
What do you really think, Joe?
But what? The stiff?
Joe turns his head away and looks pensive.
I think she went to a bridge fully dressed and stood there breathing the warm night air. And she took off her jacket and folded it neatly on the ground. And then she unbuttoned her blouse. And then undid her brassiere. Let it drop down on top of the other clothes. And she'd unbuttoned her skirt and let it slip down over her hips. And then she'd unroll her stockings and hold them out so that they blew in the breeze like pennants before she let them float off into the night. And she'd shiver and ask herself if she really wanted to go through with this. And she'd answer that question by kicking her clothes into the river. And hurriedly now she'd take off her garter and her knickers. And there she'd be, standing in her petticoat, thinking about whatever it was that brought her to this.
Ella, peeling the potatoes, stops to listen.
And then with her petticoat billowing around her, she'd drop into the water like a rose and float there for a moment and be gone.
Joe takes another long draw on his roll-up cigarette.
What kind of woman would do that?
Just an ordinary woman.
Ella raises her head.
You're going to sit there all day drinking tea?
Ella drops another potato into a pan. Out on the docks, coal is being loaded from a chute into the barge. Les strolls past Joe, who's levelling it with a shovel. Les steps onto the riverside to greet a man with a bicycle.
Hey.
The man in a brown overall lays the bike down and takes out a piece of paper.
Thing is, don't get muck on it.
As Les signs the delivery docket, Joe, his face black, crosses over to him and the freight supervisor.
You'll be the ones who found the girl.
Les looks at him.
Aye.
There's some evil men in this town.
A sequence of flashbacks. The dead girl's heel trailing out of the stretcher. Ella's downcast eyes. Joe's hand slowly resting on the girl's back. And Ella staring at Joe on the deck. Joe's sitting on the deck by the hatch cover. His hands are black with coal dust. He leaves a big print on the hatch. He's grim-faced and sullen. Ella has a kettle with hot water, which she pours into two bowls. Les is sitting close to Joe with the bowls between them. He scrutinises them.
Hey, how come he's getting all the hot water?
Shut your mouth.
She checks the water temperature, then walks away.
Come on, Jim, out the way.
She and her son go back down. Joe strips off his jumper and Les his shirt. There's coal dust over their torsos. They start to wash in the two bowls. They wash their faces and hands. Then Les picks up a flannel and starts to wipe down Joe's back. Joe's body is lean and fit. The skin under the coal dust pale and white. Joe then takes the flannel. Les turns his tattooed back to his younger colleague and Joe wipes it clean. Les's upper body is covered in tattoos.
It's a good pub down at Lair's. Maybe go for a game of darts.
Aye.
Evening. The barge goes into the narrow stone-walled entrance to a lock. Behind them, a working boat puffs out black smoke. Les is at the wheel, his soft cap on his head. Both Les and Joe are wearing donkey jackets. Joe stands to one side, leaning on the rail. There's a rope in his hand. They ease their way past the heavy wooden lock gates, which start to shut behind them. They're fairly low inside the lock. Joe looks up before swinging the rope round and tossing one end of it upwards. The water gushes through the sluices, and the level inside the lock rises. Joe secures the mooring rope as the barge rises, moving up the sides of the lock. Soon the barge is out onto a canal and passes a brick building on one side. Later, they're all at supper at the small table in the barge's living quarters. Ella's opposite Les and Jim. At one end of the table sits Joe, with Ella to his right and Jim to his left. Joe studies the nape of Ella's neck, then her chest when she leans forward. She scratches her armpit. Les is reading the paper.
Joe challenged me to a game of darts.
Ella looks round.
You play darts?
Sometimes. Just to pass the time.
Thought you'd find something better to do with your time.
I can think of one or two things, but not in front of the kid.
Don't you rupture yourself.
What are you laughing about, that?
Eat your potato.
Ella clears Les's plate away and rises from the table.
All of it.
Joe licks the paper on his roll-up cigarette and Jim drinks a glass of milk. Les is immersed in his paper. Ella returns to her seat and sits staring into space. Joe has a keen eye on her. Jim picks up a comic and starts reading like his father. Joe leans forward, his elbow on the table, the unlit cigarette in his left hand, which is up to his mouth. His eyes watch Ella intently. Joe carefully places his right hand under the table and hitches up his trouser leg. He rubs the bare flesh of his leg against Ella's. She sits gazing impassively. Joe continues to massage her leg with his, while father and son continue reading the newspaper and comic respectively. Joe raises his eyes, but there's no response from Ella. Joe moves his hand over to her left knee and starts to move it slowly up the inside of her thigh. There's still no response. Suddenly, she spins round and glares at him, his eyes fixed on hers. Joe's hand continues its progress up her thigh and reaches under her knickers. She moves it away.
Stop kicking me, Ma!
Oh, you stop your yelping before I help you, Ma.
She leaves the table. Les puts down his paper.
You finished, Joe?
Joe nods his head. On deck, Joe unloops the mooring rope from the post, coils it up and lays it down. He strolls along the canvas covering the cargo hold's hatches as the barge, the Atlantic Eve, makes its way along the narrow canal waters. He looks a lonely, forlorn figure as he wends his way from the front of the barge towards the back, where Les is standing at the wheel. Joe takes up a position on Les's left, leaning back against the rail. Later, he's at the wheel as the Atlantic Eve emerges from a tunnel. His face is grim. Lost in thought, he recalls the body in the water, Ella's mouth. He remembers pulling down the dead woman's petticoat and Ella scratching her armpit. He looks up to see Ella and Jim striding towards him. Young Jim goes down to the cabin, and Ella by the hatchway stares at Joe, who frowns slightly. Les and Joe are on the towpath.
Maybe they'll say something in the evening paper about that body, Les.
Think they'll mention us?
Nah.
In the pub with the barman, a bowler-hatted man and a newspaper.
Myself and Joe here, we picked a stiff out of the river this morning. Stark naked she was.
Murder?
Must have been if she had no clothes on.
Was she cut up lying?
Not a mark on her.
Les scans the paper.
There we are.
The body of a dead woman was found in the River Clyde early this morning. The woman was wearing only a thin petticoat. So far, she is unidentified. Police are
investigating. I thought you said she was naked.
The same thing. These slips are transparent.
Les, I've got a bit of a headache. I'm going to head back to the barge.
What about the game of darts?
Another time, mate.
The man in the bowler hat.
I'll give you a game.
Joe glances back and sees Les nod agreement. He makes his way down the dark towpath to the barge, stops by the gangplank for a moment, then takes a draw of his cigarette. On board, he pauses by the hatchway. He shoves back the hatch, opens the doors and descends the steps. Down below, Ella's sitting darning.
Where's Les?
She stares up at Joe.
He's found someone to play darts with.
He takes a few paces towards her.
He'll be at least an hour.
He stands over Ella, whose face is lit by the lamp hanging from the ceiling. She stares at him timidly, almost scared. Joe's face is firm and resolute, wisps of his brown hair fall over his forehead. He places a hand on Ella's shoulder.
You'll waken the boy.
She looks towards Jim's bed.
Why don't we go up on deck?
Ella's eyes are fixed on the young man in front of her. She lowers her head, then places her darning on the table. Ella rises to her feet and checks Jim's asleep. On the towpath, they walk in the opposite direction from the pub.
I'm not going any further.
The barge is still in their sights. Ella is standing up against a low embankment wall. Joe takes a quick look along the moonlit towpath, then steps in towards her. He starts to slowly unbutton the coat she's now wearing. Ella stands stock still. Joe opens the coat, then slips his hands inside. His hands caress her breasts. He steps closer and forces her back. He frantically pushes up her skirt. She lies back on top of the embankment wall and places her arms behind her head. Her bare legs are apart, her knees bent. Joe kisses her thigh and runs a hand down towards her groin. He bends down and places his head between her legs. Her breathing quickens and her hips begin to squirm. His right hand gently strokes her stomach. He raises his head and watches her. Joe moves his hand up to her breast and gently squeezes it. He lowers his head, then sinks back down to bury it between her legs. Joe raises his body up. His hand goes to his crotch and he unfastens his fly. He semi-crouches on top of her. Her heels dig into his back as he presses down on her knees and thrusts into her. Her head is stretched back, her mouth open as the lovemaking continues. Afterwards, Ella's sitting on the embankment wall, Joe beside her, smoking a cigarette.
Police are investigating that woman.
She turns to face him.
There's a bit in the newspaper about it.
She slides herself off the wall. Ella buttons up her coat.
What made you think of that?
Something to say?
Her back is to him.
You've done enough talking for one night.
Are you sorry?
That lot of good that would do me.
In the barge's living quarters, Ella strikes a match and lights an oil lamp. She places the long, thin, bulbous cover on it, then turns to check on young Jim, who's still tucked up in bed. Joe watches her.
It's a pity he's coming back.
What?
It's a pity he's coming back.
He looks behind him.
The bunk there.
She takes his hand and looks at him shyly.
You're nice, Joe.
They stand inches apart. Ella clasps Joe's right hand. He looks into her eyes, a smile on his face.
Are you hungry? Could fry you an egg.
No, not now, Ella. I'll take a cup of tea, though.
They look up on hearing a noise on deck. Les Les clambers and half slithers down the steps. Ella's pouring water from the kettle. Joe's at the table. Les staggers across, chucks down his cap, and shoves the table aside. He sits down in his usual place and leans back, watching Ella. Joe's head turns from Les to Ella. Then he stares at his hands.
You two are bloody quiet.
Shame you know.
What's up, Les?
I know fine well. What's up? He's lost money at darts again, and he comes back here and tries to take it out on me.
Listen, woman, don't you...
You shut your damn mouth, Leslie Galt. You'll get no rise out of me.
I have never lost money at darts.
You're a liar.
She glares defiantly at him. A little taken aback, Les sits upright and turns to look at Joe, whose eyes are trained straight ahead, unflinching.
A tea not ready yet?
Wait your hurry. The tea will be ready when it's ready.
Les stares ahead, his body stiff.
Did he make that right up in the papers, then, huh? Pretty mangy, no mention it was.
I'm not really interested in any of that.
No?
Joe shakes his head. He moves as Ella brings the teapot with its cosy and some mugs over to the table. She sits down opposite Les, who discards the cosy and concentrates hard on pouring the tea. Joe sits awkwardly at the end of the table, his eyes flickering from Ella to Les, before lingering on Ella. A bright sunny day on a beach. Two young women walk across the sand close to the water. A small group is sitting behind a windbreak and two bathers run into the sea. Joe, in fawn trousers and a jerkin, stands on a sand dune leading down to the beach. He swings the duffel bag he's carrying off his shoulder and sits down. Joe looks around and spots a young woman with long brown hair pinned up, wearing a dark top and a navy skirt with a white striped pattern. She turns and sees him. He smiles at her. She turns away but looks again as he continues to gaze in her direction. She gives a shrug of her shoulders and turns away again. She shuffles about uneasily but remains where she is. There's a broad grin on Joe's face. He looks fresh-faced and less somber than on the barge. He faces the front, then turns again to watch the girl. Joe gets to his feet and strolls over to her. She looks up as he approaches and settles himself down beside her on the sand. He seems almost carefree. He reaches into his pocket for a cigarette tin. He proffers the tin to her. She reaches in, takes out a cigarette and taps it on her knee. He selects one, closes the tin and taps a cigarette on the lid. He puts the cigarette in his mouth and lights it. He draws heavily on it, takes it out of his mouth, then blows on the lit end before offering it to the girl. She uses its glowing tip to light her own cigarette, then hands Joe's back to him.
Have you been swimming?
I don't swim.
They both puff away, looking out to sea.
How about you?
I don't have a swimming costume.
Joe has a cheeky and infectious grin on his face.
Are you here on holiday?
Just here for the day.
She looks away, then casts her eyes down. Joe gazes intently at her.
What's your name?
She turns to face him.
Kathy.
Kathy and Joe both smile.
Would you like to go for a walk with me, Kathy?
Where to?
Over there.
He indicates with his head the rocks beyond her to her left. Kathy turns to see where, takes a drag of a cigarette, blows out the smoke, cogitates for a moment, then turns her head towards him with a smile. His duffel bag over his shoulder and carrying her open straw bag, Joe leads the way over large rocks. One hand in his pocket, he strides confidently up to a secluded spot. He lays her bag down, drops his own, then leans back against a vertical rock face, his knees slightly bent. He watches her as she follows and stops a few yards from him. She studies him intently, his ruggedly handsome features, his light brown hair and lips tightly closed. Her hair, cut in a fringe, flops over her eyes. She cocks her head to one side, grins and ambles closer to him. She too leans against a rock, still a short distance from him. The two stare at each other. Night. Joe lies in his bunk on the barge, smoking a cigarette, remembering. Day. A dead rat floats by the Atlantic Eve as the barge makes its steady way along the canal. Joe in a pull-a-neck sweater is sitting on the canvas cover reading a book. Young Jim, in a brown sweater with yellow stripes and blue dungarees, is scrubbing the deck. He dips the brush in a bucket. As another barge comes towards them, Jim takes the bucket to the edge and lowers it on a length of rope. As it fills, it drags him in. Joe realizes.
Jim's overboard!
He dives in despite the approaching barge. Joe grabs the boy and treads water as the big barge passes close to them. Joe swims towards the bank. The other bargee at the tiller yells out. The big barge chugs on. Les moors the Atlantic Eve and Ella leaps onto the towpath. Joe, carrying Jim, clambers up the bank as Ella comes racing to them, a big towel in her hands. She wraps it round the boy. She starts to dry him but ends up hugging him desperately. Joe stands, dripping wet, watching. Ella, crouched down by Jim, looks up at Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
She lifts her son up and carries him towards their barge. Joe, now in a dark tracksuit top, is on deck at the wheel. On a dark evening cloud in the sky, the long straight canal cuts through swathes of green.
What can you see?
Les and Jim are at the bow from where they've spotted the fairground. Les walks back to the hatchway and calls down.
Ella!
She climbs up.
Look at that.
Slipping on her cardigan, she looks over.
Thought maybe you and me might take the wee man, eh?
I've my work to do, you take him.
I'll stay aboard if you want to go.
Les nods and turns to Ella.
I haven't the time. You go.
Les turns to Joe.
Welcome along, Joe. Just for a bit, stretch my legs.
Aye, all right.
Ella, her folded arms holding a waist-length cardigan firmly in place, moves off towards Jim. At the fairground, it's raining as Les leads Jim and Joe to a roll of penny stall.
Right, that's the money. Here we are. Right, that's what you're wearing, son. Here we are.
Les's penny rolls down a wooden chute onto a board.
Yes, that one!
Tuppence. See, always win. Daddy knows how this works, son.
Les has another go.
And that's Tuppence.
You're touching the line, mate, sorry.
Excuse me, I was not touching the line. Don't, you shouldn't
have touched the line. Coins must have touched the line.
A big fella.
Mom! Oh, rubbish! What are you doing here, man?
I'm working here, though.
Oh, sorry, Bob. This is Joe Hardy. He's been working with us the last couple of
good
months.
Good to meet you, Joe.
You too.
Me and Les, we used to work in the same shipping firm. Never the same ship, mate.
No. Bob, sorry, this is my son, Jim.
Jim, don't want to go back to the barn.
You could go to the pictures. There are two of them in town.
You want to go to the pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah? Joe, you want to go to the pictures?
No. I'll walk you to town and then I'll go back to the barge. I've got a good book.
Let's make a run for it, eh?
They move away from the stall. The lights on the big wheel are turned off, as are those of all the stalls and rides. By the barge, the rain dances off the water. Inside...
Ella?
Ella's asleep in bed. In the darkness, Joe runs his hand over her shoulder and back, stroking her gently.
Go away, Joe. I don't want to see you. Go away.
Joe reluctantly moves away from the bunk, leaving his hand lingering for a moment. He crosses to the table, fumbles for his matches, and reaches for the lamp, knocking it over. Ella races ahead and looks over as Joe lights a match.
Now look what you've done.
She gets out of bed and comes over to him.
Here, give them to me.
She takes his matches and lights one. Wearing only her nightdress, she's crouched down beside him. She lifts the lamp to the table and tries to light it with no success.
It's broken.
Lit only by the burning match held between her fingers, the two stare at each other. Joe moves towards Ella and places his left hand tenderly on her cheek. As he leans towards her, he bends down and reaches beneath her nightgown. He raises his head and kisses her, softly. As his hand caresses her armpit, her anguished face crumples. She raises her arm as he kisses her cheek. He kisses her fully on the lips. She responds, bringing her arms round his neck. In bed, they lie face to face, not touching. Their bodies are still, their eyes open and unblinking. Joe studies Ella's face. Her shallow breathing quickens, and she starts to blink under his intense gaze. Joe's in a town centre bookshop, grey stone buildings opposite. He walks out onto the pavement under the shop's awning and strolls up the street. Green, white and orange buses pass. Joe slows to a halt when he sees Kathy walking towards him.
Hello, Joe.
Hello, Kathy.
He stands rooted to the spot. She steps forward.
What are you doing here?
Joe moves closer to her.
I'm working down by the river.
Working? Joe Taylor in bed with the industrious working classes.
I don't worry, I'm not taking any pride in it.
Neither face shows any trace of a smile.
So you never made it to China?
Joe shakes his head. Kathy glances down. In a cafe.
How's the flat? Are you still there?
Yes. Got a flatmate now.
Nice.
Kathy nods.
Don't see much of her.
They're sitting opposite each other. She fiddles distractedly.
Why a barge, Joe? Can you find something a bit more glamorous?
Just sort of happened, really. How about you? Are you still at the office?
Yes. Nothing's really changed. Except us.
Looking almost severe in a grey tartan shirt and with her hair pulled back in a ponytail, Kathy stares at Joe, who takes her hand in his. That night...
What did you do with all my stuff?
I threw it away. Like you told me to.
They're walking along a cobbled street.
Thought I'd never see you again.
Down by the quayside in the dark, lights shine in the distance. On the wharf, there are trucks and lorries parked. Joe and Kathy are by one of them. They're locked in a passionate embrace. She breaks away, a hand on his chest. Kathy steps back, then removes her coat. Joe watches her every movement. She slips down her skirt and starts to unbutton her grey tartan shirt. The lights cast an eerie glow on Joe's face, the left side of which is a bluish grey. His eyes fall on her chest as the buttons of her shirt are undone one by one and it slips to the ground, leaving her in a petticoat. She removes the clasp from her hair. A breeze ruffles the petticoat, which she lifts up over her head, revealing her breasts. She tosses the petticoat away and stands naked in front of Joe. He fondles her breast, and she leads him nearer the truck. She sits on the ground and pulls him down towards her. Her head and torso are under the truck chassis. Joe kneels down and removes his shirt and sweater. He unfastens his trouser belt and tugs them and his underwear down. Under the truck, he lies on top of her, thrusting. She writhes beneath him, her back and arms grubby from the oily quayside. His forearms rub against the ground and he raises himself onto his hands. She runs her fingers through his hair, and he lowers his head to kiss her on the lips. The glowing tip of a cigarette illuminates the darkness of a tunnel as the Atlantic Eve, with Joe at the wheel, moves through it. Les is lying on the deck, running his feet over the walls of the tunnel, guiding it through. Joe keeps his eyes peeled down the port side of the barge as it moves out into daylight. A crane is winching the coal off the Atlantic Eve. It drops its load onto a coal pile. Later, Ella is scrubbing Jim in a tin bath set over a wood fire.
Anchors away and the sails are all set. Whoa, Rio, the girls that were leaving will never forget, because we're bound for the Rio Grande.
Les on guitar and vocals and Joe, both covered in coal dust, are nearby on the barge.
Oh, Rio, so fare thee well, my fair pretty girl. 'cause we're bound for the Rio Grande. The ships she went sailing out over the bar. Oh, Rio, we pointed our nose at the southern star.
All yours, gentlemen.
On you go, Joe.
You sure?
I'm just getting straight here. Anyway, it'll be hotter when I get there.
Joe draws on a cigarette and moves away. Bathed, he comes down into the barge's cabin and drops his dirty overalls. He peeps out of a porthole, then treads softly over to the bunk where Jim is lying asleep. Ella watches him. Joe moves aside as Ella comes across and closes the curtain across the bunk. She stands, hands on hips, staring at Joe, who has a towel over one shoulder. In synchrony, they move towards each other and meet in the middle of the room, only the lips touching in an embrace. Their heads twist and turn, and their breathing becomes heavier. Their lips part momentarily, then they resume their kiss. They break apart, their noses just touching, and gaze at each other again. Ella, almost robotically, raises a hand, cups it round Joe's neck and twists his head round, blowing in his ear. Another day. At a scrap metal yard, the Atlantic Eve is being loaded. Joe's sitting on the barge when Les looks down from the wharf.
Joe, hands up that sack of coal there.
Joe nods and gets to his feet. On the quayside, Joe hauls the sack of coal up with a rope.
Jim's
chucking stones into the water. His mum and dad are with a man by a greengrocer's truck. Joe carries the coal over.
That goes in the back of the truck, Joe. Back of the truck, all right,
sir. Hi, Joe. How's the wee man then?
Hmm? When you coming to stay with me and your auntie Gwendolyn?
Just back to school again next week.
All right. Well, seeing you're going away, I've got a little something for you.
Jim?
A banana!
What do you see?
Thank you, Uncle Sam.
Sam hands Ella a box.
Thanks, Sam.
You hear about a naked woman they found in the clay?
Aye, some pair about it,
eh? It's me and Joe found her.
You're joking?
No. Police, everything.
You're gonna stop going on about that body? Honest to God, he'll not shut up about it.
Joe, listening at the back of the truck, turns away. The Atlantic Eve sits high in the water as it chugs along the canal on a bright day. Night. In the cabin, Joe's asleep on his bunk, a single blanket over him. Les's coughing rouses him. Ella comes into Joe's partitioned-off bunk room and sets down a mug of tea. She stands stiffly looking at Joe, who's now awake. She reaches her hand under the blanket and moves it quickly up Joe's thigh to his crotch. She gently massages him and he sits up, moving his mouth towards hers.
Drink your tea.
She walks back out. Joe and Les's bunks are divided only by the partition. He and Les both sip their drinks. Joe and Jim are sitting on the canvas hold cover near the front of the barge, which eases its way along the narrow canal past rows of tenement buildings. Washing hangs in the small backyards. Later, Ella and Jim are on a wooden wharf.
Say bye to your dad.
Bye, Dad.
Bye, son. Look after yourself.
Joe fastens down the cargo hold covers as Ella leads Jim, in school uniform, away.
Take care.
Bye.
On the move again, Les is at the wheel. Ella in a flimsy short-sleeved dress beside him. Joe, a grim look on his face, sits in front of them. He rises, walks over to the hatchway, and disappears down into the cabin. Ella shivers. Les puts an arm around her shoulders and plants a kiss on her cheek. She moves his hand away, folds her arms and rubs her bare skin. Les grabs the wheel. Ella comes down to the cabin and finds Joe sitting on his bunk reading. She stands beside him, still rubbing her bare arms. Joe suddenly watches her as she leans against the wall. He tosses his book away.
You sad about Jim?
Ella looks away dejectedly.
He needs an education. When he goes away, it breaks my heart.
He sits with his neck craned round to look at her. Her arms folded, her right hand is holding her left arm just above the elbow. She rubs it nervously with her forefinger. She reaches out for the door. Pulling the door shut, Ella, still in her short-sleeved dress, stands to the side of Joe. He's wearing the dark tracksuit top zipped up to his chest. Her right hand still on the door handle, Ella brings her left hand up to her dress and starts to unbutton the front. Joe's eyes are fixed on her actions. With both hands, she tugs her dress open, revealing her breasts. Joe glances up at her. Then, looking at her bosom, he eases himself round and cups her breasts in his hands. He bends forward and places his lips on the nipple of her left breast. His head moves rhythmically in a circular motion. Ella stands tall, gazing straight ahead. Up on deck, Les continues to guide the barge along the canal. Down below, Ella hitches up her skirt, pushes the fully clad Joe back on the bunk, and straddles him. Ella's feet are now planted either side of a square window on the low ceiling of Joe's cabin. Naked from the waist down, he's now on top of her as she lies back on the bunk. On deck, Les turns the wheel as the Atlantic Eve moves out onto a wide river. A timber-built wharf juts out into the water behind him. In Joe's cabin, a dirty ashtray is full of cigarette ends and spent matches. The glowing tip of another cigarette hovers over it and more ash is flicked in. Joe, fully dressed, is sitting studying something in his hand. He sees his own reflection in a small mirror. Inscribed on it are the words, "Think of me when you look at yourself. With undying love, see." He recalls being under the truck after sex with Kathy.
I had a dream about you yesterday.
I haven't thought about you for months.
His head is resting on her lap.
I did think you'd have gone away.
I have gone away. I've shed my old skin and merged into the fog.
He's topless, she's naked.
I'm pregnant. It's yours. 2 months gone.
He turns to look up into her face.
2 months ago you wanted me out of your life.
I didn't know this was going to happen.
Is there anything you want me to do about it?
Just thought you should know.
He looks away and lies there, smoking a cigarette.
You could marry me and we could have a beautiful baby together.
Aye. Kids, it's not exactly us, is it?
Why not, Joe? What are you frightened of?
There's a kid in the barge and I spend almost every moment wanting to kick him over the side.
You don't have to be like that. We can handle it intelligently.
It's not about us. It's about what kids do to people. Kathy, I am not someone you want to marry. You know that.
Kathy picks up her petticoat as Joe petulantly tugs on his jersey. Kathy slips on her petticoat and raises the straps up to her shoulders. Joe, his back to her, looks round.
Have you been seeing anyone else?
It's your child, Joe.
That doesn't answer my question.
He glares at her. Kathy lowers her head and looks away.
His name's Dan. He's a plumber. He's nice, but I'm not really interested in him. He's married anyway.
So that's why you said it's mine.
It's the truth!
Joe leaps up and puts on his jacket.
I have to get back to the barge.
Don't run away. We can sort this out together.
No, we can't. I'm not yours anymore.
That's not true. We were right. We were fearless.
Aye, well, that was then. I have to go.
He walks away along the quayside.
But, Joe, what about the baby?
I'll send some money when I have some.
I looked after you and you needed it. For 2 years, I supported you. You owe me
Bye,
more.
Kathy.
Chasing after him, still in her petticoat, Kathy slips and falls into the water 20 feet below. Joe stops, looks back, then walks slowly to the spot where she fell. He crouches at the edge of the quayside. Joe's eyes peer down into the black water, reflected light the only illumination.
Kathy?
His hands grip the edge.
Kathy? Kathy?
He scans the surface of the water.
Kathy!
Joe's face is tinged blue by the moonlight and distant streetlight. He moves his head from side to side, then places a hand on his knee and levers himself upright, his face taut and grim. Joe turns away from the murky waters and looks around, takes a few paces, then looks back down. He stands at the edge of the quayside for another brief moment before walking briskly back to the truck. He gathers up her shoes and clothes and tosses them into the back of the truck. He picks up her lighter and a handkerchief, wipes it, throws it into her handbag, and flings them into the water. Jill then runs off into the darkness. All that's left of Kathy are her clothes dumped in the back of the truck. The hatchway down to the living quarters of the Atlantic Eve opens, and dim morning light streams in. Joe tiptoes carefully down the steps and heads straight for his cabin. Shutting the door behind him, a pensive-looking Joe wearily eases himself down onto his bunk. He sits upright, lost in thought, before leaning his upper body to his left, resting the side of his head on the partition wall. He stares into nothing and blinks his eyes. A bright sunny morning. Ella is up on the deck of the barge, sweeping it in an ungainly fashion, her knee-length skirt restricting the movement of her legs. The Atlantic Eve moves at a steady pace through a tree-lined section of the canal. It reaches and starts to overtake Joe, who's walking along the towpath deep in thought. Only after the bow of the barge has passed him does Joe seem to realize it's there. He glances up at Ella, then round at Les, who's at the wheel.
Joe, you want nine?
No, I'll see you at the next lot. All right.
Joe takes a long drag on a cigarette in his hand. Then as he blows out the mouthful of smoke, he flicks the cigarette into the canal. Joe reaches into a hip pocket and takes out a wallet. He opens it, then feels inside for something. He tugs out a photograph and stares at it. It's of Kathy. Les is reading the Glasgow Telegraph, its main headline, Clyde Murder, and a photograph of a man.
Look at this, Joe.
They're at the lock.
Daniel Gordon, plumber of 26 Black Street, Glasgow, was today remanded in custody, charged with the murder of Catherine Dimley, sometime axis. Dimley's body was discovered 2 weeks ago by two barsmen who recovered it from the River Clyde. They'll hang that man for sure.
Joe screws up his eyes.
Well, we need to go and celebrate to get back, eh? Not every day you get a mention in the papers.
Joe glances down at Les's paper and makes his way to the front of the barge, placing a hand on the locked stone wall for support as he goes. The newspaper floats in the canal. Gordon's photograph is that of a somber man in a soft cap with bags under his eyes. Later, Joe's beside Les.
You're Joe.
Joe places a cigarette between his lips and takes hold of the wheel as the barge approaches the tunnel. Les walks to the bow and pushes the barge clear of the low sides of the tunnel. Looking back towards Joe, the young man is silhouetted against the greenery of the shrubs and trees which line the canal. The arched entrance to the tunnel frames the tableau. Out of the tunnel, the barge is berthed in the canal basin. Joe's sitting on deck, reading.
Joe!
Les is on shore.
I'm going to go for a beer. You want to come?
No, I'll finish this.
Suit yourself. I'll see you later.
See you later, Les.
Sitting cross-legged, book in hand, Joe watches Les go. A fly is sitting on an exposed breast close to the nipple. It rubs its legs as though washing. Joe is lying in bed awake next to Ella, who's asleep. They're both naked. Joe leans up on an elbow.
Ella.
She reluctantly comes to.
Ella. Les will be back in a minute.
She turns to face Joe.
Not if I know him, he won't.
She's lying on her back, her arms stretched up, her hands clutching her pillow.
Scared now.
Ella sits up, turns her body towards Joe and tries to kiss him. He pulls his head away. She kisses his neck. Her right hand moves down to his groin and her arm moves up and down. Joe leans his head back on the pillow and groans. Joe brings his hands up to his head as he lies back. Ella continues to masturbate him, her hand hidden under the blankets. It's dark. Ella and Joe are lying side by side, half asleep. They hear footsteps on the deck. Awake now, they lie on the bunk, only Joe's head moving.
Do you think he knows?
Of course he does.
Joe raises himself and stretches for a cigarette. Eyes fixed on the ceiling, he fumbles for a match. His face lights up in the dark as he brings the match up to the cigarette in his mouth. He shakes out the match, chucks it in the ashtray, and lies back down next to Ella.
How long has he been up there?
He must have come down and seen us.
Joe absent-mindedly strokes his chest with his hand.
What we do?
Well, that depends on him, really.
Why should it depend on him? How the hell does he think he is, anyhow? Clumping about like the Day of Judgment.
It's just his way of letting us know he's there.
Well, he's done that.
Joe takes a drag of a cigarette and lies calmly on the bunk, blowing out the smoke. Ella turns her head to look at him.
Are you just going to lie there?
Well, there's no hurry. I'll finish my cigarette.
Her face grim, she lies beside him as he puffs away nonchalantly. Ella petulantly tugs the blanket off him and wraps it round her waist. With a tut, he lifts himself off the bunk, sticks a cigarette in his mouth, and sullenly covers his nakedness with his trousers. Ella's eyes are fixed on him all the while. She turns away as Joe pulls a shirt over his head. Joe moves off, picks up a jug, then returns to stand in front of Ella. He puts the jug to his mouth and slurps from it. Milk dribbles from its spout. He finishes drinking and wipes his mouth with his hand. Joe hauls himself up through the hatchway and onto the deck of the Atlantic Eve. He looks across to Les, who's pacing about on the tarpaulin covering the cargo hold's hatches. He stops when he sees Joe. The younger man, now wearing a jacket, takes a few steps forward.
I'm sorry, Les.
Hands in pockets, he faces Les.
It just happened. It was nothing personal against you.
I should kick your fucking head in.
Joe nods his head.
I won't fight you, Les. Hit me if you think it'll make you feel better.
Les marches up, pulls back his fist, and Joe flinches.
What about my son? Did you think what was going to happen to my son while you were fucking my wife?
It wasn't like that.
What was it like, Joe? Tell me, what was it like?
Look, I'll get my stuff. I'll leave you to sort it out with Ella.
It's her fucking barge!
The two men are inches apart.
I'll go.
Les strides past Joe onto the quayside. Seated on the edge of the bunk downstairs, Joe looks at the crumpled pillows and covers. Ella's across the room, still naked.
So he's going to write me a letter?
Joe turns to face her.
That's what he said.
Do you want a cup of tea?
Aye, I could do with one.
Me too. Looks as though we settled for one another, Joe.
His eyes dart up suddenly. Ella and Joe stare at each other. They both laugh. At the wharfside, a crane is lowering a blue metal drum into the cargo hold of the Atlantic Eve. A worker on the jetty is guiding the crane driver. Joe is on the deck and Ella is replacing the hold covers. Joe unfastens the crane's hook and removes the harness round the barrel, which now lies amongst a host of others. Inside the barge, it's still daylight as Ella and Joe lie in bed. Joe rubs a hand over Ella's bare thigh, then moves it up to her stomach and caresses her navel. He moves over on top of her. Their lips almost touch. She writhes under him. He turns onto his side and rubs his lips over her neck. Pulling himself back on top of her, he raises his body. She looks at him as he gently lowers his mouth to hers. Night. As the rain falls outside, Joe sits downstairs toying with his tobacco tin. Lit only by the glow from the kerosene lamp beside him on the table, Joe has a hand up to his face, his chin and jaw resting on it. He stares absently into space.
Joe.
He looks across at Ella like a little boy scolded. A flashback of Kathy struggling in the water, then of Kathy's hand in a lake where she and Joe are in a rowing boat kissing as the boat lists dangerously.
No, stop! Stop! I don't like it! Stop! I can't swim till you know it! Stop! I'm scared! I'm scared, you bastard!
Joe rocks the boat and Kathy clings to him. As they kiss, he stops swaying and the boat calms down. On their knees, they embrace passionately. Kathy lies down on the bottom of the little rowing boat, her legs under one of the wooden seats. Joe snuggles down beside her and places his hands between her legs. Later, they lie quietly side by side. Morning. Ella comes down into the barge's living quarters with shopping.
We've set a date for that man's trial.
Joe, who's been lounging fully clothed on the bed reading, gets up and goes over to the table to pick up the paper she's brought in. As Joe reads, Ella takes a biscuit from the tin and, munching it, crosses over behind him. She leans down, her arm over his shoulder. The headline states, father of two to stand trial.
I thought it was four he had.
What?
Children. Four kids.
Yeah, so did I. It must be a mistake.
Ella sits down opposite Joe.
Here's the paper. I don't know.
He resentfully shifts his paper while Ella unpacks her shopping onto the table.
Poor bastard.
How? He killed an innocent woman.
Who made you the judge? He didn't do it.
What makes you the detective?
It was an accident.
It's not what they think.
She died with no clothes on, so it must be murder. Do you want to know how I know it was an accident? Do you want to know?
I thought you weren't interested in all that.
Joe glares at her, lays down the paper, and leaves.
No.
The biscuit in her mouth, Ella picks up the newspaper and reads. Day, it's raining heavily. Joe, wearing a cap and a waterproof jacket over a white pillow neck jumper, is at the wheel of the Atlantic Eve, the inevitable cigarette in his mouth. His face is grim. The cluttered riverbed. Amongst the items of rubbish lying on it is a manual typewriter. A flashback to Joe in his bedsit. He's at a desk ripping up a manuscript. Joe sits at the desk, cigarette in hand, and types. He takes a drag of the cigarette in his right hand as his left pulls the carriage release lever, then resumes typing. He makes a face and starts to type faster and faster. He tugs the gibberish from the typewriter and bins it. Sitting back, he places his hands behind his head and gazes out of a window. On the barge, Ella's at the wheel, Joe stands on the edge, rope in hand, as they near a quayside. A man on the wharf moves towards the rear mooring as Joe walks the length of the barge to the bow and picks up the forward mooring rope. There's a pile of crates on the quayside. Leaning against one of them is Les. Joe skips off the barge and ties the mooring rope as Ella cuts the engine. Les walks towards her while Joe hauls the barge in. Ella stands arms crossed and sullen as Les moves near. Joe strides towards them.
Come for my stuff.
I'll get it.
Les stares at Joe, who crosses the barge and goes down through the hatchway. Les turns towards his wife, who's standing motionless by the rail.
How's Jim?
You know where he is. Go and see him yourself.
I thought he might want to come and stay with me at my mother's for a while.
Ella glances at the hatch as Joe appears, guitar case in one hand, suitcase in the other. Joe puts the cases down on the wharf beside Les.
Do you want a cup of tea?
We've got work to do.
Joe sticks his hands in his pockets and glares at Ella. She stares defiantly back. Les bends down to pick up his cases.
You've asked me to be a witness at that trial. It's only the one of us, the one.
Well, I couldn't have told them anything anyway.
Les turns his gaze from Joe to Ella.
You say hello to the boy for me?
Go and see him.
Les, his demeanour sad, about turns and round-shouldered, slopes off down the quayside. Joe watches him go, then turns and strolls up to Ella. A short distance from her, he stops and faces back towards the departing Les.
I better find a lawyer. Make things good and proper again.
She nods in confirmation, then walks off towards the hatchway. The muscles in Joe's cheek twitch. Ella's downstairs in a floral dress applying lipstick. Joe's sitting opposite her.
Les says there's no future in all this. He says once fuel rationing stops, the trucks will take over. And it doesn't bother me. I've spent my life on the barges.
Joe brutally watches her rub her lips together.
When we've saved the money, what I really fancy is a nice wee bungalow in one of the quiet suburbs of Edinburgh. Wouldn't take long, would it, Joe?
What?
The divorce.
Joe leans back in his chair.
I don't know, Ella. I don't know about such things.
She takes a powder puff.
It'll be easier when Jim's bigger, with the three of us.
And dabs it on her face. Day. Jim in school uniform with a coat, and his mother carrying his case climbed down to the barge.
Say hello to Joe.
All right.
Bastard.
You mind your language.
Ella shoves the small boy through the hatchway and downstairs. Night. Jim is on his bunk, looking through the gap between the curtains. He watches his mother and Joe as their naked bodies gyrate in front of him. Day. Ella hands over money.
Your wages. Tax deducted.
She lays the money on the table. Joe grabs the coins and folds the notes. The barge makes its uneasy way through a thick fog. Ella and the boy are in the bow. She's standing stiffly with Jim crouched beside her. The bank on the starboard side looms close. Joe's at the wheel in the stern. Low-hanging branches brush against Joe's face. He sweeps them away with his hand.
Port!
Ella's left hand is raised. Joe steers to port away from the bank. People working on the towpath come into Joe's view. Joe's eyes are fixed on the people on the towpath. A warder in a dark uniform with a flat peaked cap oversees the men in blue shirts and dungarees as they work. One pushes a heavy roller, the others rake tarmac onto the path. A man pushing a rake stops and looks up at Joe as the barge passes. The Atlantic Eve continues through the fog. A clear day, Joe places some tools in a tin container and shuts the lid. Ella, in a headscarf and coat, walks along the towpath with Jim to the barge and they climb on board. Jim goes downstairs and Ella walks up to a grease-stained Joe.
What's the matter?
It's Sam, my sister's husband.
Ella's eyes are puffy and red.
There's been an accident. He fell off his lorry and was killed.
She searches Joe's face for a moment.
Happened last week, but I only just got the letter. I sent her a telegram saying we'll visit her.
Joe moves towards Ella and wraps his arms comfortingly around her in a warm embrace. He's careful to keep his oily hands and rag away from her coat. Day, a woman with henna-coloured hair and bright red lipstick opens her door to Ella and hugs her.
Is this your new boyfriend, Al?
Ella glares.
This is Joe. We're going to be married.
You'll have to excuse me now being dressed. I wasn't expecting visitors.
Hello, Auntie Gwen.
Gwen pulls her light revealing gown together and lets her visitors into her tenement flat. Joe and Gwen share a look as he moves past her.
Shall I make you all a cup of tea?
I'll help you. Come on, Jim.
Jim follows his mother to the kitchen area. Gwen sashes after them, watched all the way by Joe, who's wearing a shirt and tie. Joe saunters around the bed sitting room and in front of a dressing table mirror picks up a stocking and runs it gently over his fingers. Joe picks up a white glove from the dressing table. He holds it for a moment, then takes it up to his face. He watches himself in the mirror as he sniffs the glove. Joe reaches his hand under Gwen's bed covers and rubs it over the sheets. Later, he's sitting on the end of the bed beside a full ashtray, the cigarette end stained with lipstick, reading an astrology book, when Ella walks in carrying a tray. She's followed by Jim and Gwen.
Gwen's coming on the barge for a week or two. Hope you don't mind, Joe. Don't suppose I'm breaking up a honeymoon or anything?
She stands provocatively in front of Joe. Ella moves close.
It'll be good for her.
Gwen smiles and sips her tea. On the barge.
She doesn't drink. Can't understand people that don't drink. If it wasn't for the head I'd get in the morning, I'd be drunk every night. Gin's my drink. No gin and lime or gin and vermouth or anything else, just gin straight. Some people find it bitter, but not me.
Gwen's with Joe at the wheel.
We should go out for a drink sometime. Tonight. We can tell Elle we're going to the cinema.
The barge passes under a bridge.
There's one thing I hate, is going to the dentist.
That night, inside.
You sure you don't mind, Ella? I fancy the pictures.
No, you go. Somebody's got to stay and look after the barge. You enjoy yourself.
Gwen and Joe get to their feet. Ella beams at him.
See you later, Ella.
Joe rubs Ella's shoulder. She stares after him with big, doleful eyes. Gwen and Joe are walking along an alley.
Of course, I'm sorry for Sam. Just to get to work one day and that to happen. I didn't have time to dwell on it much, though. He had to be buried as soon as possible on account of what the bus did to him.
Thought he fell off a lorry.
Oh, he did. Then a bus ran him over.
Gwen pulls a cigarette from her mouth as she leaves the toilets of a busy, smoky pub. She walks seductively over to Joe and sits beside him at a table.
It's about time Ella had a good look at herself and what she's doing.
A waitress freshens the drinks. Joe takes his wallet out from his back pocket. As he hands money over to her, something from it falls to the floor. The waitress picks up the black and white photograph of Kathy and places it on the table beside Joe.
An old girlfriend?
He looks down.
Yeah, she died.
Still carrying.
He turns to Gwen.
I don't know why.
She stares impassively at him.
I should have got rid of it a long time ago.
Of course you should. The dead can look after themselves.
Gwen taps the ash off her cigarette. She takes her gin and downs it in one.
Drink up. We've got business to attend to.
She turns and picks up her bag and coat. With a quick glance at Joe, she prepares to leave. In an alleyway, Gwen is pressed up against a wall as Joe thrusts from behind. A lipstick-stained cigarette lies half-smoked on the ground. Joe clutches her waist as he withdraws. Gwen turns her face from the brick wall to look back at him. He leans in and his mouth brushes the shoulder of her blue coat.
Look at the mess you've made of me.
Joe pulls his trousers up as Gwen adjusts her skirt. She walks a few paces to the cigarette butt which lies on the ground. Picking it up, she takes a drag from it and looks back at Joe, who lifts his belt from by his feet and buckles it around his trousers. She stomps off and Joe, fastening the buttons on his fly, follows. Back at the barge, Joe, Gwen and Ella are sitting around a table with mugs of tea. Gwen swirls hers.
Right, that's me.
Gwen firmly puts her mug down.
See you, lovebirds, in the morning.
With fleeting glances at the sullen Ella and Joe, she gently rises from her cushioned seat and slowly sidles out of the room. Joe is left staring across at Ella, whose gaze has not left the table. Without looking at Joe, Ella removes Gwen's and her own cup from the table. Joe draws on his cigarette. Ella sets the cups down. Then, with her back to Joe, she starts to undress. Joe stubs out his cigarette and rises from the table. He slowly moves towards her as she pulls her dress up over her head. She clutches it to her chest as Joe lays one hand upon her shoulder and one on her right breast. She stands rigid as he softly kisses her neck.
Leave me alone, Joe.
Ella walks away from him. He stands and stares at her. Evening. An old woman crosses a cobbled street with tenement buildings on either side. Joe, his cap pulled down and wearing his donkey jacket, strides along the pavement, passing a one-legged man on crutches. He visits a pub.
He's Gully. So what is that?
He's not been tried yet. Why not be Gully?
Seen fair trials 100 times. They get fancy lawyers, they walk in legal technicalities.
That's right. That's
right. That's right.
I agree with you.
He's
Gully. He's
Gully. He's
nice.
I'm telling you what, he's keep it, dude.
Joe listens to the conversation around him. He recalls being in his bedsit when a wet and bedraggled Kathy runs in.
Hi there.
He sits smoking a cigarette and watches as she takes off her wet clothes. He stubs out the cigarette. She looks away.
Don't suppose he did any writing today.
Not much.
Wouldn't mind so much if I thought you were going to finish it.
Do you think it's easy? I'm trying to do something different, don't you understand? I'm trying to do something new.
I don't understand. Why can't you write an ordinary book? One other people can understand. For 8 months, I've been getting up early, sitting in a lousy office all day, and when I get home, you're either drunk or asleep. What have you done today while I was earning the money for us to eat?
I made some custard.
You did what?
I made some custard.
Custard? I work all day. And you make custard.
Yeah, it struck me as a good idea, so I made some. It's over here in the dresser.
Don't give a damn where it is. You can eat it yourself, that's all. I certainly don't want any custard.
I put a lot of effort into this custard and you're going to eat it.
You know what you can do with it.
Oh, I know what I'm going to do with it!
He throws the bowl of custard over Kathy, now stripped to her panties and stockings. He grabs a stick. He beats her buttocks with a stick. He tosses away the stick and rises to his feet, leaving Kathy writhing on her knees on the floor. Joe walks away and returns with two bottles of sauce. He pours ketchup over her back, throws the bottle away, then empties a bottle of brown sauce over her. Kathy grips his trouser leg, then flays her arms at him. He rubs the sauce into her back, then crosses to the table. Grabbing a bag of sugar, he lets its contents spill out over her. She's still on her knees. Joe kneels down behind her. He unceremoniously lifts her buttocks up, leaving her panties on. He undoes his trousers, grabs her by the shoulder with one hand, pulls her back and penetrates her. Joe's arms are around her waist. Her back and shoulders are covered in ketchup, which looks like blood. Her arms slip on the custard on the floor. Joe's hands are now up at her armpits as he holds tightly to her. He gets off his knees and slithers on the floor behind her. He presses his clothed chest against her and slides his hands along her sauce-covered back. His movements become less frantic. Her body twitches as Joe pulls himself carefully away from her. The ketchup is smeared around his mouth. He lies back on the floor as Kathy sobs. Later, in semi-darkness, Joe is sitting tying up his shoes. He gets to his feet and walks out of the door. Kathy, motionless, lies curled up on the floor. Joe's in the pub.
Onion's too good for a bastard like that. Tervis like that should be fucking burnt at the stake. Listen, if he did it, he'd be better after. That's what it says.
Joe recalls climbing the spiral staircase of the tenement block. Opening the door of the flat, he walks in and looks around. It's pristine. He sees Kathy asleep in bed and shuts the door. Joe moves slowly across the room, taking his jacket off as he does so. He holds onto it for a moment, then tosses it away. He tugs his sweater up over his head, revealing his bare torso. He throws the sweater onto the floor. Then he bends down to unfasten his shoes. Kathy stirs as Joe, now naked, slips into bed beside her. He hauls up the blankets. Joe lies on his back. Kathy, on her side facing him, leaves her head on the pillow but places an arm on his chest. He strokes her arm and shoulder. It's night. Joe's standing by the riverside and his right hand is Kathy's photograph. It's aflame. Joe stares at the back of it until it's almost totally consumed, then tosses it into the river. In the barge...
When's your birthday, Joe?
What?
Your horoscope. I'll read it to you.
Where's Ella?
Ella's gone daft. Come and sit down.
What do you mean Ella's gone daft?
She's gone to see Les.
Gwen sits with a half-consumed bottle of gin. Joe goes to a doorway and comes back.
Hey, what do you think you're doing?
A kit bag's in his hands. He goes to a cupboard.
I'm leaving. Should have left a long time ago.
He packs the kit bag. Joe glares at the cackling redhead in front of him. Back in the bar, he nurses a whiskey and smokes a cigarette. Along the bar is Bill, a regular. He sees the kit bag on a stool by Joe.
You going anywhere interesting?
He nods to the bag.
No, I'm leaving, not going. I've just packed in a job in a barge.
Bill studies Joe carefully.
You looking for somewhere to stay? Suppose I am. I'm looking for a lodger. I'm not looking to stay anywhere long, maybe a month. Well, you interested? Aye, how much? £10 a week. You'll have to meet the missus. Fine. I work nights. You'll probably see more of her than me.
You'll have to pay in advance.
Connie, Bill's wife, is in her late 20s. She's short, fair hair and a lean face, which looks pinched as she half frowns. Bill looks up at Joe, who hands over some money.
Your room's through there. I've got to go to work. I'll see you in the morning.
Bill picks up a flask and a box and goes.
See you later.
Joe goes into his narrow room, partitioned off from the main one by a carpeted frame. Connie, meanwhile, puts her young boy into a bed. Joe saunters back out and watches as Connie tucks the boy in. A small girl is sleeping at the foot of the same bed. The woman in her beige top under a blue tartan smock looks over at him. He raises his eyes and they stare at each other.
I suppose you'll blip the last lodger.
The morning light filters through an ill-fitting curtain. Joe is asleep in bed beside Connie. She rouses and shoves him on the shoulder, waking him.
You better go, he'll be back soon.
Joe turns over, drags himself out of the bed and walks off. In the pub, Bill is sitting reading a newspaper. Joe comes over carrying two whiskies. He sets one down in front of Bill.
It was Bardsman that found that body, wasn't it?
On the front page, a photo of Kathy.
Anyone you know?
What?
The Bardsman, did you know them?
Aye, I knew one of them.
Joe picks up his drink.
You ever been to a big trial?
No. You?
No. Wouldn't you want to either?
I was thinking I might go along to it. Just to see what it's like, you know?
At the flat, while Joe shaves, he watches in his mirror the reflection of Bill and Connie having sex. Joe's face is covered in shaving soap. He rinses the razor, then before bringing it back up to his face, he has another peek. Joe is part of a crowd walking under an archway into the courtyard of an imposing building. A man in a flat cap and a tray held by straps around his neck grabs his shoulder. Joe shrugs the hand off and grim-faced continues to make his way into the court. Inside, he takes out his shaving mirror.
How would you describe your relationship with the deceased?
We were flatmates, but I'd only recently moved in, so I would say we were friendly rather than friends.
And what do you know of her relationship with the accused?
I think she met him when he came to fix the plumbing in the flat. I only saw him once, so I couldn't really form an opinion. But I know she was lonely. Her last boyfriend had recently gone to China.
Thank you. That will be all.
Joe, gazing down on proceedings, smirks. His eyes drift to the man in the dock. As the prim flatmate makes her way out of the witness box, Joe watches a court official fidget with his hands. He remembers.
You should have been rich, Joe. It might have worked then.
They're on the stairwell outside Kathy's flat.
I loved you.
Joe is a few steps lower than she is.
Will you write to me?
He looks up at her and nods.
I'll send you a letter from China.
You're not going to China.
Maybe I am.
Her face begins to crumple. Kathy looks away. Her arms hang limply by her side.
I'm sorry.
He moves up and she flings her arms around his neck.
What's there to be sorry about? It happens.
Joe moves his head back to look at her. She stares intently into his face.
We ran our course.
He kisses her, then breaks away. Joe leans down and picks up his canvas kit bag and typewriter from the landing. He slings the kit bag over one shoulder and marches off down the circular staircase of the tenement building. The walls are half covered in tiles with a dado border.
Goodbye, Joe.
Joe glances back up the stairwell and continues on his way. Under a railway bridge, he throws his typewriter into the river. Joe watches the concentric circles of ripples on the surface as the typewriter disappears from his sight. Under the water, it sinks rapidly to the riverbed. It lands with a thud, stirring up the silt which slowly settles around it. On the riverside, Joe just stands and stares. As a train thunders overhead, Les, carrying a large wooden chest, approaches.
What did you do that for?
I had no use for it.
Must be worth something, though.
Not to me.
Back in the courtroom.
It was definitely Harry Wisbeth. I'd recognise a face like that anywhere. Got a good eye for that sort of thing, you know.
Thank you. No further questions. For my next witness, I'd like to call Mr. Leslie Galt.
Joe, leaning forward, sits up and watches Les, wearing a suit, shirt and tie, make his way nervously to the witness box and stand to attention.
And can you please describe for us the circumstances under which you found the body of the deceased?
We were waiting for a cargo of coal to be delivered. I saw the body floating by, and I fished out with Joe.
Joe?
Joe perks up.
My mate.
I see. And was Miss Dinwiddie dead when you...
Joe looks round the gallery.
Fished her out of the water?
Oh, she was dead, all right. Mm.
Joe and Ella spot each other.
Thank you. No further questions?
No questions of this witness, my lord.
Thank you. You may step down.
Ella gets to her feet and eases her way along the bench to make an exit. Joe's eyes follow her. She doesn't look back at him. Later, he's upstairs on a bus. The conductor hands Joe a ticket and he puts it in his pocket. The bus is busy. Joe is sitting behind a young couple. Joe forlornly gazes out of the window, then his eyes narrow. On the street below, he sees a Kathy lookalike. The bus passes the girl. Joe turns his head from the window and sits reflectively. Hands in pocket, he walks up the street and enters Bill and Connie's tenement building. In the flat, Connie's standing naked in a sink, bathing. His back to Connie, he takes off his jacket.
So, do you think he's guilty?
I haven't established it was murder yet.
What do you mean?
Well, they haven't proved that it was.
Well, they know that. A woman doesn't get undressed for nothing.
That's not the point. So she had sex.
You'll see.
Connie steps down from the sink, towel in hand.
They'll hang him. Poor bugger.
Upon examination of the fingerprints on the deceased's shoes, it was found that they matched exactly those of the accused. Also, the fibres found under her fingernails exactly matched the material of the accused's shirt.
There could be no mistake.
The chances that they could have belonged to anyone else are practically nil. Coupled with the evidence of sexual activity and the minor abrasions, in my opinion, there is overwhelming evidence that the deceased had intimate contact with the accused very shortly before her death.
Objection. Opinions of these facts are really matters for the jury.
Overruled.
The defence lawyer in wig and gown testily sits down. Joe, in the front row of the gallery, rises to his feet and makes his way along it. Outside, hands in pockets and cigarette in his mouth, he walks under the arched entrance. Joe is lying fully clad on his bed in the flat. His eyes are open as he listens to the dripping of a tap. In his mind's eye, he sees Kathy's body, arms outstretched, hair swirling around her face as she floats in the river. In the court, Gordon is in the witness box.
I wasn't with her then. I swear, I never went near the river.
Silence, silence in the court. Just answer the question, Mr. Gordon.
What was the question, sir?
Joe puts his hands to his head.
What did you do after removing the deceased's clothes?
I never took her clothes off. We just used to go for walks together.
So you admit you were with her?
No, not then. Yes.
Were you aware that the deceased was pregnant?
No. No, it wasn't me. No. I wouldn't. I didn't.
You knew she was pregnant?
No.
You planned to get rid of her before your wife discovered your dark secret?
No.
She invited you into her house as a tradesman. She trusted you as a tradesman. You abused that position of trust. You preyed on her loneliness.
Joe's in the bar, leaning on the counter, deep in thought. He takes a long drag on his cigarette and drains a glass of whiskey. He sets the empty on the bar. Joe leaves the bar. He stands in a phone box, pen in hand, and is writing in block capitals. The paper is resting on a little shelf in the box.
I alone was with Catherine Dimley at the time she died. The drowning was accidental. There was no murder. I cannot identify myself without the risk of finding myself in the same shoes as Mr. Gordon. I made the mistake of not reporting the accident at the time, and I have that on my conscience. If you condemn Mr. Gordon,
you will be condemning an innocent man.
Joe places the note in an envelope and comes out of the phone box, which is by the court building. He passes through the archway. Inside, he strolls along a corridor and unnoticed lays the note down on a reception desk. A clerk picks it up and places it with a pile of papers. Joe's in a park. Behind him, a statue on a plinth. Three young people pass by. A blonde girl between two young men. They're all bright and bouncy. As the three of them walk along a tree-lined path, one of the young men places an arm round the girl's shoulder. Joe notices this and his face seems sad. He turns away and walks off in the opposite direction. In the distance, a tall spire reaches up into the sky. In his room at Connie and Bill's, Joe sits on his bed, his torso covered by a vest. He toys aimlessly with the shaving mirror, turning it over and over. He draws on a cigarette and ponders. Day. Joe is among the crowd passing under the archway to gain entrance to the trial. His face is somber and his eyes dart around. In the courtroom, the clerk of the court rises to his feet and addresses the jury.
Ladies and gentlemen, who speaks for you?
A man stands.
Have you reached a verdict?
Yes.
What is your verdict?
We find the accused guilty as charged.
Is your verdict unanimous or by majority?
Unanimous.
Joe sits upright, puts a hand to his head, then slumps forward.
Would the accused please stand?
A bewildered Daniel Gordon rises. Joe is behind him, his eyes fixed on his back.
Mr. Gordon, do you have anything to say before sentence is passed?
Just... I swear to God I'm innocent.
No, Daniel!
Silence! Silence!
What about the children?
Silence! I'll clear the court.
The judge stares at the prisoner.
Mr. Daniel Gordon, you have been found guilty of the murder of Miss Catherine Dimley. After taking into consideration all the circumstances of this case, I have no choice but to impose the maximum penalty.
The judge places a black cloth over his wig.
I therefore sentence you to be hanged by the neck until you are dead. May God have mercy upon your soul. Take the prisoner down.
Gordon, confused and distraught, turns, and a policeman in uniform escorts him down from the dock. Joe stares wide-eyed.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I'd like to thank you for fulfilling your civic duty.
All rise!
Everyone around Joe stands, and they all start to make their way out of the courtroom. Joe sits, staring into space. His head is still, his whole body is inert. Soon, he's left all alone on the benches. The pale light of dawn trickles in through the window of Joe's room at Connie and Bill's. Joe's sitting cross-legged on the bed, smoking a cigarette. He carefully stubs it out in an ashtray on a cabinet by the bed, then unfolds his legs and gets to his feet. Joe picks up his kit bag and slowly walks out of his room, closing the door behind him. He crosses to the front door and lays down his bag. Down by the river, he marches along the quayside, the kit bag over his right shoulder, his left hand in his pocket. Joe lays his kit bag down and strolls over to the edge. He looks down at the dark waters below where Kathy fell. The current is moving quickly. Joe reaches into his jacket pocket and takes out the shaving mirror. He runs his thumb over the inscription. Think of me when you look at yourself. With undying love, C. He sees his reflection and tosses the mirror away. The mirror disappears from his view almost immediately. He stands, hands in pockets, and looks out over the water. He doesn't move for quite some time. His jaw is set. His eyes are fixed on the spot where the mirror sank. A light breeze ruffles a wisp of hair over his brow. Joe takes a breath and turns away. He grasps the drawstring of the kit bag and lifts the bag onto his shoulder. He strolls back along the quayside whence he came in the grey-blue morning light. ITFC audio description was by James O'Hara.
Man sticks his fingers inside of his mouth.
Cast: Joe Ewan McGregor, Ella Tilda Swinton, Les Peter Mullen, Kathy Emily Mortimer, Jim Jack McElhone, Gwen Therese Bradley, Daniel Gordon Ewan Stewart, Bill Stuart McQuarrie, Connie Pauline Turner, Bob Mbusi Alan Cook, Sam Rory McCann, Freight Supervisor Ian Hanmore, Barman Andrew Neal, Bowler Hatman Arnold Brown, Stallwoman Meg Fraser, Blackstreet Pub Men Stuart Bowman, Willie Brennan, Ronnie Bridges, John Kazek, Duncan McCarty, Stuart Porter, Malcolm Shields, Blackstreet Barman Tam Deanburn, Prosecutor Michael Carter, Judge Struan Roger, Forensics Expert Matthew Zajac, Kathy's Flatmate Vare Steenbock, Jury Foreman John Comerford, Mrs. Gordon Anne-Marie Timoney, Clerk of the Court John Hume, Defence Counsel Sandy Nielsen, Witness Des Hamilton, Blind Man Eddie Dahlstrom. Guitar for Rio Grande, Johnny McGlynn. Musicians, Barry Burns, John Quinn, Una McGlone, Richard Colburn, Gregor Phillip, John Somerville, Caroline Barber, Alistair Roberts, Greg Lawson, Lisa Aferiat, Fiona Stephen, Robert Irvin, Donald Gillen, Georgia Boyd. The Hung Drawn Quartet, Raymond MacDonald, Graham Wilson, Keith Edwards, Alan Beauvoisin, Stuart Brown, George Lyle. String arrangements by Malcolm Lindsay and DB. Original music written by David Byrne. Published by Moldy Fig Music, BMI. The Rio Grande performed by Peter Mullen. Haitian Fight Song written by Charles Mingus. Published by Jazz Workshop Inc. 100% World, BMI. Performed by the Hung Drawn Quartet. Produced by David Byrne. Arranged by Raymond MacDonald. The Great Western Road, written and performed by David Byrne. Published by Moldy Fig Music, BMI. Music recorded and mixed at Carver Sound Workshops, Glasgow. Special thanks to Sally Child, Alistair McKenzie, Chris Ward, Bernard Trainer, Michael Edwards Hammond, Brian Hutton, British Waterways. With thanks to Lindy King, Christian Hoddle, Sean Gascoigne, Angus Piggott, Jackie Hurt, Catherine Otway, Lisbeth Saville, Alex Linklater, Barney McHugh, Tony Rolink, Dallin Hersher, Sue Mingus, Jeffrey Ockerman, Jackie Cottle, Margot Trockey, David Whitehead, John Brown, Eddie Dick, Alistair Scott, Angels the Costumiers, Egham Swan Sanctuary, Keels, Saratoga Trunk, Savalas Audio Post Production, Glasgow. Filmed on location in and around Glasgow, made with the support of the National Lottery through the Film Council Premier Fund and Scottish Screen. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright laws and other applicable laws, and any unauthorised duplication, distribution or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Developed in association with Sigma Films, International Sales Hanway Films Limited, an Anglo-French co-production. Copyright 2002, Young Adam Productions Limited / Studio Canal. Distributed by Warner Brothers Pictures and AOL, Time Warner Company.